He got two steps and then stopped. His breath had been speeding up, his brain getting his heart and lungs ready to swim the fastest 50 yards of his life, and now his breath stopped like the rest of him, simply stopped in the middle of an inhale. He turned his head, and Randy saw the cords in his neck stand out. "Punch!" he said in an amazed, choked voice, and then he began to scream. He screamed with amazing force, great baritone bellows that splintered up toward wild soprano levels. They were loud enough to echo back from the shore in ghostly half notes. At first, Randy thought he was just screaming, and then he realized it was a word. No, two words, the same two words over and over. "My foot!" Deke was screaming. "My foot! My foot! My foot!" Randy looked down. Deke's foot had taken on an odd, sunken look. The reason was obvious, but Randy's mind refused to accept it at first. It was too impossible, too insanely grotesque. As he watched, Deke's foot was being pulled down between two of the boards that made up the surface of the raft. Then he saw the dark shine of the black thing beyond the heel and the toes, dark shine alive with swirling, malevolent colors. The thing had his foot. "My foot!" Deke screamed, as if to confirm this elementary deduction. "My foot! Oh, my foot! My foot!" He had stepped on one of the cracks between the boards. "Step on a crack, break your mother's back," Randy's mind gibbered. And the thing had been down there. The thing had... "Pull!" he screamed back suddenly. "Pull, Deke, goddammit! Pull!" "What's happening?" Laverne hollered, and Randy realized dimly that she wasn't just shaking his shoulder. She had sunk her spade-shaped fingernails into him like claws. She was going to be absolutely no help at all. He drove an elbow into her stomach. She made a barking, coughing noise and sat down on her fanny. He leaped to Deke and grabbed one of Deke's arms. It was as hard as Carrara marble, every muscle standing out like the rib of a sculpted dinosaur skeleton. Pulling Deke was like trying to pull a big tree out of the ground by the roots. Deke's eyes were turned up toward the royal purple of the post-dusk sky, glazed and unbelieving, and still he screamed, screamed, screamed. Randy looked down and saw that Deke's foot had now disappeared into the crack between the boards up to the ankle. That crack was perhaps only a quarter of an inch wide, surely no more than half an inch, but his foot had gone into it. Blood ran across the white boards in thick, dark tendrils. Black stuff, like heated plastic, pulsed up and down in the crack, up and down, like a heart beating. "Gotta get him out. Gotta get him out quick, or we're never gonna get him out at all. Hold on, Sisko, please, hold on." Laverne got to her feet and backed away from the gnarled, screaming Deke tree in the center of the raft, which floated at anchor under the October stars on Cascade Lake. She was shaking her head numbly, her arms crossed over her belly where Randy's elbow had gotten her. Deke leaned hard against him, arms groping stupidly. Randy looked down and saw blood gushing from Deke's shin, which now tapered the way a sharpened pencil tapers to a point. Only the point here was white, not black. The point was a bone, barely visible. The black stuff surged up again, sucking, eating. Deke wailed. "Never going to play football on that foot again. What foot? Ha ha!" And he pulled Deke with all his might, and it was still like pulling at a rooted tree. Deke lurched again, and now he uttered a long, drilling shriek that made Randy fall back, shrieking himself, hands covering his ears. Blood burst from the pores of Deke's calf and shin. His kneecap had taken on a purple, bulging look as it tried to absorb the tremendous pressure being put on it as the black thing hauled Deke's leg down through the narrow crack, inch by inch. "Can't help him. How strong it must be. Can't help him now. I'm sorry, Deke. So sorry." "Hold me, Randy," Laverne screamed, clutching at him everywhere, digging her face into his chest. Her face was so hot it seemed to sizzle. "Hold me, please. Won't you hold me?" This time, he did. It was only later that a terrible realization came to Randy. The two of them could almost surely have swum ashore while the black thing was busy with Deke. And if Laverne refused to try it, he could have done it himself. The keys to the Camaro were in Deke's jeans, lying on the beach. He could have done it, but the realization that he could have never came to him until too late. Deke died just as his thigh began to disappear into the narrow crack between the boards. He had stopped shrieking minutes before. Since then, he had uttered only thick, syrupy grunts. Then those stopped, too. When he fainted, falling forward, Randy heard whatever remained of the femur in his right leg splinter in a green stick fracture. A moment later, Deke raised his head, looked around groggily, and opened his mouth. Randy thought he meant to scream again. Instead, he voided a great jet of blood, so thick it was almost solid. Both Randy and Laverne were splattered with its warmth, and she began to scream again, hoarsely now. "Ugh!" she cried, her face twisted in half-mad revulsion. "Ugh! Blood! Ugh! Blood! Blood!" She rubbed at herself and only succeeded in smearing it around. Blood was pouring from Deke's eyes, coming with such force that they had bugged out almost comically with the force of the hemorrhage. Randy thought, talk about vitality. Christ, look at that. He's like a goddamned human fire hydrant. God, God, God. Blood streamed from both of Deke's ears. His face was a hideous purple turnip, swelled shapeless with the hydrostatic pressure of some unbelievable reversal. It was the face of a man being clutched in a bear hug of monstrous and unknowable force. And then, mercifully, it was over. Deke collapsed forward again, his hair hanging down on the raft's bloody boards, and Randy saw with sickish amazement that even Deke's scalp had bled. Sounds from under the raft. Sucking sounds. That was when it occurred to his tottering, overloaded mind that he could swim for it and stand a good chance of making it. But Laverne had gotten heavy in his arms, ominously heavy. He looked at her slack face, rolled back an eyelid to disclose only white, and knew that she had not fainted but fallen into a state of shock unconsciousness. Randy looked at the surface of the raft. He could lay her down, of course, but the boards were only a foot across. There was a diving board platform attached to the raft in the summertime, but that, at least, had been taken down and stored somewhere. Nothing left but the surface of the raft itself, 14 boards, each a foot wide and 20 feet long. No way to put her down without laying her unconscious body across any number of those cracks. Step on a crack, break your mother's back. Shut up. And then, tenebrously, his mind whispered, do it anyway. Put her down and swim for it. But he did not. Could not. An awful guilt rose in him at the thought. He held her, feeling the soft, steady drag on his arms and back. She was a big girl. Deke went down. Randy held Laverne in his aching arms and watched it happen. He did not want to, and for long seconds that might even have been minutes, he turned his face away entirely, but his eyes always wandered back. With Deke dead, it seemed to go faster. The rest of his right leg disappeared, his left leg stretching out further and further, until Deke looked like a one-legged ballet dancer doing an impossible split. There was the wishbone crack of his pelvis, and then, as Deke's stomach began to swell ominously with new pressure, Randy looked away for a long time, trying not to hear the wet sounds, trying to concentrate on the pain in his arms. He could maybe bring her around, he thought, but for the time being it was better to have the throbbing pain in his arms and shoulders. It gave him something to think about. From behind him came a sound like strong teeth crunching up a mouthful of candy jawbreakers. When he looked back, Deke's ribs were collapsing into the crack. His arms were up and out, and he looked like an obscene parody of Richard Nixon giving the V for Victory sign that had driven demonstrators wild in the 60s and 70s. His eyes were open. His tongue had popped out at Randy. Randy looked away again, out across the lake. Look for lights, he told himself. He knew there were no lights over there, but he told himself that anyway. Look for lights over there. Somebody's got to be staying the week in his place. Fall foliage, shouldn't miss it. Bring your Nikon. Folks back home are going to love the slides. When he looked back, Deke's arms were straight up. He wasn't Nixon anymore. Now he was a football ref, signaling the extra point had been good. Deke's head appeared to be sitting on the boards. His eyes were still open. His tongue was still sticking out. "Oh, Cisco," Randy muttered, and looked away again. His arms and shoulders were shrieking now, but still he held her in his arms. He looked at the far side of the lake. The far side of the lake was dark. Stars unrolled across the black sky, a spill of cold milk somehow suspended high in the air. Minutes passed. "He'll be gone now. You can look now." "Okay, yeah, all right. But don't look, just to be safe. Don't look. Agreed?" "Agreed, most definitely. So say we all, and so say all of us." So we looked anyway, and was just in time to see Deke's fingers being pulled down. They were moving. Probably the motion of the water under the raft was being transmitted to the unknowable thing which had caught Deke, and that motion was then being transmitted to Deke's fingers. Probably. Probably. But it looked to Randy as if Deke were waving to him. The Cisco Kid was waving adios. For the first time, he felt his mind give a sickening wrench. It seemed to cant the way the raft itself had canted when all four of them had stood on the same side. It righted itself, but Randy suddenly understood that madness, real lunacy, was perhaps not far away at all. Deke's football ring, All-Conference, 1981, slid slowly up the third finger of his right hand. The starlight rimmed the gold and played in the minute gutters between the engraved numbers, 19 on one side of the reddish stone, 81 on the other. The ring slid off his finger. The ring was a little too big to fit down through the crack, and of course it wouldn't squeeze. It lay there. It was all that was left of Deke now. Deke was gone. No more dark-haired girls with slow eyes. No more flicking Randy's bare rump with a wet towel when Randy came out of the shower. No more breakaway runs from midfield with fans rising to their feet in the bleachers and cheerleaders turning hysterical cartwheels along the sidelines. No more fast rides after dark in the Camaro with Thin Lizzy blaring "The Boys Are Back in Town" out of the tape deck. No more Cisco Kid. There was that faint, rasping noise again, a roll of canvas being pulled slowly through a slit of a window. Randy was standing with his bare feet on the boards. He looked down and saw the cracks on either side of both feet suddenly filled with slick darkness. His eyes bulged. He thought of the way the blood had come spraying from Deke's mouth in an almost solid rope, the way Deke's eyes had bugged out as if on springs as hemorrhages caused by hydrostatic pressure pulped his brain. "It smells me. It knows I'm here. Can it come up? Can it get up through the cracks? Can it? Can it?" He stared down, unaware of Laverne's limp weight now, fascinated by the enormity of the question, wondering what the stuff would feel like when it flowed over his feet, when it hooked into him. The black shininess humped up almost to the edge of the cracks. Randy rose on tiptoes without being at all aware he was doing it. And then it went down. That canvassy slithering resumed, and suddenly Randy saw it on the water again, a great dark mole now perhaps 15 feet across. It rose and fell with the mild wavelets, rose and fell, and when Randy began to see the colors pulsing evenly across it, he tore his eyes away. He put Laverne down, and as soon as his muscles unlocked, his arms began to shake wildly. He let them shake. He knelt beside her, her hair spread across the white boards in an irregular dark fan. He knelt and watched that dark mole on the water, ready to yank her up again if it showed any signs of moving. He began to slap her lightly, first one cheek and then the other, back and forth, like a second trying to bring a fighter around. Laverne didn't want to come around. Laverne did not want to pass go and collect $200 to take a ride on the Redding. Laverne had seen enough. But Randy couldn't guard her all night, lifting her like a canvas sack every time that thing moved, and you couldn't look at the thing too long. That was another thing. He had learned a trick, though. He hadn't learned it in college. He had learned it from a friend of his older brother's. This friend had been a paramedic in Nam, and he knew all sorts of tricks. How to catch head lice off a human scalp and make them race in a matchbox, how to cut cocaine with baby laxative, how to sew up deep cuts with ordinary needle and thread, One day, they had been talking about ways to bring abysmally drunken folks around so these abysmally drunken people wouldn't puke down their own throats and die, as Bon Scott, the lead singer of AC/DC, had done. "You want to bring someone around in a hurry?" the friend with the catalog of interesting tricks had said. "Try this." And he told Randy the trick which Randy now used. He leaned over and bit Laverne's earlobe as hard as he could. Hot, bitter blood squirted into his mouth. Laverne's eyelids flew up like window shades. She screamed in a hoarse, growling voice and struck out at him. Randy looked up and saw the far side of the thing only. The rest of it was already under the raft. It had moved with eerie, horrible, silent speed. He jerked Laverne up again, his muscles screaming protest, trying to knot into Charlie horses. She was beating at his face. One of her hands struck his sensitive nose, and he saw red stars. "Quit it!" he shouted, shuffling his feet onto the boards. "Quit it, you bitch! It's under us again! Quit it, or I'll fucking drop you! I swear to God I will!" Her arms immediately stopped flailing at him and closed quietly around his neck in a drowner's grip. Her eyes looked white in the swimming starlight. "Stop it!" She didn't. "Stop it, Laverne! You're choking me!" Tighter. Panic flared in his mind. The hollow clunk of the barrels had taken on a duller, muffled note. It was the thing underneath, he supposed. "I can't breathe." The hold loosened a little. "Now listen, I'm going to put you down. It's all right if you..." But "put you down" was all she had heard. Her arms tightened in that deadly grip again. His right hand was on her back. He hooked it into a claw and raked at her. She kicked her legs, mewling harshly, and for a moment he almost lost his balance. She felt it. Fright rather than pain made her stop struggling. "Stand on the boards."
"No."
Her air puffed a hot desert wind against his cheek. "It can't get you if you stand on the boards."
"No, don't put me down. It'll get me. I know it will. I know."
He raked at her back again. She screamed in anger and pain and fear. "You get down or I'll drop you, Laverne." He lowered her slowly and carefully, both of them breathing in sharp little whines, oboe and flute. Her feet touched the boards. She jerked her legs up as if the boards were hot.
"Put them down," he hissed at her. "I'm not Deke. I can't hold you all night."
"Deke?"
"Dead."
Her feet touched the boards. Little by little, he let go of her. They faced each other like dancers. He could see her waiting for its first touch. Her mouth gaped like the mouth of a goldfish.
"Randy,"
she whispered.
"What? Where is it?"
"Under. Look down." She did. He did. They saw the blackness stuffing the cracks, stuffing them almost all the way across the raft now. Randy sensed its eagerness and thought she did, too.
"Randy, please."
"Shh." They stood there. Randy had forgotten to strip off his watch when he ran into the water, and now he marked off 15 minutes. At 8:15, the black thing slid out from under the raft again. It drew about 15 feet off and then stopped as it had before. "I'm going to sit down," he said.
"No."
"I'm tired," he said. "I'm going to sit down and you're going to watch it. Just remember to keep looking away. Then I'll get up and you sit down. We go like that, here." He gave her his watch. 15-minute shifts. "It ate Deke," she whispered.
"Yes."
"What is it?"
"I don't know."
"I'm cold."
"Me too."
"Hold me then."
"I've held you enough."
She subsided. Sitting down was heaven. Not having to watch the thing was bliss. He watched Laverne instead, making sure that her eyes kept shifting away from the thing on the water.
"What are we going to do, Randy?"
he thought. "Wait," he said. At the end of 15 minutes, he stood up and let her first sit and then lie down for 30 minutes. Then he got her on her feet again, and she stood for 15 minutes. They went back and forth. At 9:45, a cold rind of moon rose and beat a path across the water. At 10:30, a shrill, lonely cry rose, echoing across the water, and Laverne shrieked. "Shut up," he said. "It's just a loon."
"I'm freezing, Randy. I'm numb all over."
"I can't do anything about it."
"Hold me," she said. "You've got to. We'll hold each other. We can both sit down and watch it together."
He debated, But the cold sinking into his own flesh was now bone deep, and that decided him. Okay. They sat together, arms wrapped around each other, and something happened. Natural or perverse, it happened. He felt himself stiffening. One of his hands found her breast, cupped in damp nylon, and squeezed. She made a sighing noise, and her hand stole to the crotch of his underpants. He slid his other hand down and found a place where there was some heat. He pushed her down on her back. No, she said, but the hand in his crotch began to move faster. I can see it, he said. His heartbeat had sped up again, pushing blood faster, pushing warmth toward the surface of his chilled, bare skin. I can watch it. She murmured something, and he felt elastic slide down his hips to his upper thighs. He watched it. He slid upward, forward, into her. Warmth. God, she was warm there, at least. She made a guttural noise, and her fingers grabbed at his cold, clenched buttocks. He watched it. It wasn't moving. He watched it. He watched it closely. The tactile sensations were incredible, fantastic. He was not experienced, but neither was he a virgin. He had made love with three girls, and it had never been like this. She moaned and began to lift her hips. The raft rocked gently, like the world's hardest waterbed. The barrels underneath murmured hollowly. He watched it. The colors began to swirl, slowly now, sensuously, not threatening. He watched it, and he watched the colors. His eyes were wide. The colors were in his eyes. He wasn't cold now. He was hot now. Hot the way you got your first day back on the beach in early June, when you could feel the sun tightening your winter white skin, reddening it, giving it some colors. Color. Some tint. First day at the beach, first day of summer, drag out the Beach Boys oldies, drag out the Ramones. The Ramones were telling you that Sheena is a punk rocker. The Ramones were telling you that you can hitch a ride to Rockaway Beach. The sand, the beach, the colors moving, it's starting to move. And the feel of summer, the texture, Gary U.S. Bond, school is out and I can root for the Yankees from the bleachers. Girls in bikinis on the beach, the beach, the beach. Oh, do you love, love. The beach, do you love, love, I love. Firm breasts, fragrant with copper tone oil, and if the bottom of the bikini was small enough, you might see some hair. Her hair. Her hair is in the... Oh, God, the water! Her hair is... He pulled back suddenly, trying to pull her up, but the thing moved with oily speed and tangled itself in her hair like a webbing of thick black glue, and when he pulled her up, she was already screaming, and she was heavy with it. It came out of the water in a twisting, gruesome membrane that rolled with flaring nuclear colors. Scarlet vermilion, flaring emerald, sullen ochre. It flowed down over Laverne's face in a tide, obliterating it. Her feet kicked and drummed. The thing twisted and moved where her face had been. Blood ran down her neck in streams. Screaming, not hearing himself scream, Randy ran at her, put his foot against her hip and shoved. She went flopping and tumbling over the side, her legs like alabaster in the moonlight. For a few endless moments the water frothed and splashed against the side of the raft, as if someone had hooked the world's largest bass in there, and it was fighting like hell. Randy screamed. He screamed. And then, for variety, he screamed some more. Some half an hour later, long after the frantic splashing and struggling had ended, the loons began to scream back. That night was forever. The sky began to lighten in the east around 4:45, and he felt a sluggish rise in his spirit. It was momentary, as false as the dawn. He stood on the boards, his eyes half closed, his chin on his chest. He had been sitting on the boards until an hour ago, and had been suddenly awakened, without even knowing until then that he had fallen asleep, that was the scary part, by that unspeakable hissing canvas sound. He leaped to his feet, bare seconds before the blackness began to suck eagerly for him between the boards. His breath whined in and out. He bit at his lip, making it bleed. Asleep! You were asleep, you asshole! The thing had oozed out from under again half an hour later, but he hadn't sat down again. He was afraid to sit down, afraid he would go to sleep, and that this time his mind wouldn't trip him awake in time. His feet were still planted squarely on the boards as a stronger light, real dawn this time, filled the east and the first morning birds began to sing. The sun came up, and by 6 o'clock the day was bright enough for him to be able to see the beach. Deke's Camaro, bright yellow, was right where Deke had parked it, nose in to the pole fence. A bright litter of shirts and sweaters and 4 pairs of jeans were twisted into little shapes along the beach. The sight of them filled him with fresh horror when he thought his capacity for horror must surely be exhausted. He could see his jeans, one leg pulled inside out, the pocket showing. His jeans looked so safe lying there on the sand, just waiting for him to come along and pull the inside out leg back through so it was right, grasping the pocket as he did so the change wouldn't fall out. He could almost feel them whispering up his legs, could feel himself buttoning the brass button above the fly. Do you love? Yes, I love. He looked left, and there it was, black, round as a checker, floating lightly. Colors began to swirl across its hide, and he looked away quickly.
Go home, he croaked. Go home, or go to California and find a Roger Corman movie to audition for.
A plane droned somewhere far away, and he fell into a dozing fantasy. We are reported missing, the four of us. The search spreads outward from Horlicks. A farmer remembers being passed by a yellow Camaro going like a bat out of hell. The search centers in the Cascade Lake area. Private pilots volunteered to do a quick aerial search, and one guy, buzzing the lake in his Beechcraft Twin Bonanza, sees a kid standing naked on the raft. One kid, one survivor, one. He caught himself on the edge of toppling over and brought his fist into his nose again, screaming at the pain. The black thing arrowed at the raft immediately and squeezed underneath. It could hear, perhaps, or sense, or something. Randy waited. This time, it was 45 minutes before it came out. His mind slowly orbited in the growing light. Do you love? Yes, I love rooting for the Yankees. And catfish. Do you love the catfish? Yes, I love the Route 66. Remember the Corvette? George Maharis in the Corvette? Martin Milner in the Corvette? Do you love the Corvette? Yes, I love the Corvette. I love. Do you love? So hot. The sun is like a burning glass, and it was in her hair, and it's the light I remember best, the light, the summer light of afternoon. Randy was crying. He was crying because something new had been added now. Every time he tried to sit down, the thing slid under the raft. It wasn't entirely stupid then. It had either sensed or figured out that it could get at him while he was sitting down.
Go away!
Randy wept at the great black mole floating on the water. 50 yards away, mockingly close, a squirrel was scampering back and forth on the hood of Deke's Camaro.
Go away! Please, go anywhere but leave me alone. I don't love you.
The thing didn't move. Colors began to swirl across its visible surface.
You do. You do. Love me.
Randy tore his eyes away and looked at the beach, looked for rescue, but there was no one there, no one at all. His jeans still lay there, one leg inside out, the white lining of one pocket showing. They no longer looked to him as if someone was going to pick them up. They looked like relics. He thought, if I had a gun, I would kill myself now. He stood on the raft. The sun went down. 3 hours later, the moon came up. Not long after that, the loons began to scream. Not long after that, Randy turned and looked at the black thing on the water. He could not kill himself, but perhaps the thing could fix it so there was no pain. Perhaps that was what the colors were for. Do you love? He looked for it, and it was there, floating, riding the waves. Sing with me, Randy croaked. I can root for the Yankees from the bleachers. I don't have to worry about teachers. I'm so glad that school is out. I am
gonna sing and shout.
The colors began to form and twist. This time Randy did not look away. He whispered, "Do you love?" Somewhere, far across the empty lake, a loon screamed.